Okay. I think we're ready to proceed in Allard versus Farmers Insurance Exchange, case number 10CA755. Ready to proceed when you are, counsel.
May it please the court. My name is Robert Markell, registration number 12401, representing the plaintiff and appellant Don Allard in this case. The case is before the court on summary judgment entered against my client on a claim for, the term enhanced PIP or no-fault benefits following a motor vehicle accident that she was involved in June of 2001. The defendant's Farmers Insurance position and what the trial court found was that the cause of action accrued in 2003. We respectfully disagree with that position. I think it's important then to take a perspective. What did the case look like in 2003? Ms. Allard made an election, as permitted by the law, to use rehabilitation benefits to help pay her medical bills. She had been involved in the accident in 2001 and undergone medical treatment, including a cervical spine surgery, needed to use those rehab benefits to pay the full amount of the medical costs she had incurred to that point. It was not foreseeable at that time.
Did she make the election by virtue of a letter to Farmers, I guess actually signed by you, to which was attached like a short affidavit that she signed?
Well, yeah, the Farmers first notified her through my office, through me, of the right to make the election or not, and she elected to do so. To make that,
that's the June 13th, 2003 letter?
Correct.
And why
July 29th?
I'm not sure of the dates. I know it's July, June 2003. I don't know if the particular day really is material here.
I think it's June 3rd. The one I'm looking at, it's June 13th, 2003, and it's addressed to you.
And then it's made and signed.
It says the medical bills for the above referenced accident have exceeded the $50,000 maximum for medical, etc.
Correct.
Why doesn't the language in that letter, where it says, with this affidavit in your file, additional medical bills will be paid up to the maximum payable of the $50,000 rehabilitation benefit and or the medical time limitation of 5 years, why doesn't that put your client on notice that she had only basic coverage and had not been offered extended coverage, and therefore she should maybe make a claim?
It puts her on notice that a reformation of a policy can be sought, but the point is, why? Why would she do that if the normal PIP benefits were adequate? And she didn't foresee she would need any additional PIP benefits until 2006, when she was informed that surgery had to be redone. And that's our essential position on this appeal, is that, yes, she could have filed suit for reformation then instead of making the election. But the belief and understanding she had at that time was that the normal PIP benefits would be adequate for her needs at that point.
Some pretty significant case law has developed, obviously, since 2003, and not the least of which was the Crosby decision in December 2010, which cited with approval the Murray decision.
Correct.
Can you tell me how your case is different from those cases or why they were wrongly decided?
I'm not disagreeing with the decisions in those cases. The cases come up with three different accrual dates. When the insurance company first notified the plaintiff that they would have only basic PIP benefits.
Isn't that this date, June of 2003?
Or maybe even earlier, quite honestly, in this case. But the thing is,
giving you the benefits and time.
But if basic PIP benefits were considered adequate by the injured party, why did they ask for more? The second accrual date that the courts have found is when the plaintiff retained counsel, is because counsel is presumed to know the law and the potential to make the claim for reformation. But the same point applies. Why would, with the benefit of counsel, suit be filed if the normal PIP benefits are adequate? And the third accrual date the court cases discuss is when the basic PIP benefits ended. And that's essentially the trigger date in this case. 5 years had passed since the accident. And at that point, coincidentally, is when, right around that point in time, same point in time, was when Mrs. Allert learned that the surgery had to be redone. Claims were submitted, and a letter was issued in June 2006 that no further PIP benefits would be provided.
After the 5 years.
Right. And so even if the accrual date is 5 years from the date of the accident, when the normal PIP benefits end, this lawsuit was timely because it was filed within 3 years of the June 2006 trigger date. The cases would have been decided.
That's when the rehabilitation benefits ended.
No, when the medical benefits ended. The rehab is rolled over into the medical coverage, but there's still only a 5-year limit. Rehab benefits are normally 10 years in duration. She was seeking further medical care in 2006, another surgery. So we were making a claim, or she was, for additional medical coverage in 2006.
But if you elect to use your or all or some of your $50,000 rehabilitation benefit, then that reduces the time limitation to 5 years. Is that correct?
Well, yeah. No medical benefits are paid more than 5 years from the date of the accident, whether it comes from the medical pool or the rehab pool. That's correct. It's important, I think, to point out, too, my client was not employed between 2001 and 2003, and therefore there was no lost wage benefits she was seeking. No trigger there that she wasn't receiving adequate compensation because there is a higher lost wage benefit under the enhanced coverage.
And what I hear you saying is there are three different possibilities for when the statute of limitations would have started to run, and one of them helps your client, but the other two don't.
Right.
So why should we follow the one that says when the benefits ended, or what's the authority for that one?
Well, the cases that have been decided, Your Honor, have found, I think almost unanimously, that whatever the trigger date of those three apply, the case is barred. No case has dealt, in my opinion, with the specific facts is that under the first two accrual dates, there was essentially no damages Mrs. Allert could have proven at that time, and therefore no point in filing the lawsuit.
Well, the Nelson case, now granted it's from the 10th Circuit, but it says an action for contract reformation accrues when a party knew or should have known that an insurer had not offered extended PIP benefits, not when a party suffers monetary damages. And they were interpreting Colorado law, and it's been cited by other divisions in this court. So how would you deal with that case?
Your Honor, I think there has to be a trigger in terms of a point in filing the lawsuit. Why, if in 2003, Mrs. Allert had no lost wages she could claim, so there's no benefit in that asking for enhanced PIP for that reason, and she believed all of her medical care had been paid for by making the election, which the statute allows her to do, what damages would she have asked the court for by seeking reformation of the policy for higher coverage?
She wouldn't have to ask for damages and wouldn't have to have damages, would she? Couldn't she have filed an action for declaratory judgment asking the court to declare her rights to extended PIP benefits? Because she's now learned that I wasn't provided that, I wasn't given that notice, so I want to make sure that I protect my rights.
I think most people don't act in a vacuum like that. I think there's a point in seeking reformation, which is not just the academic exercise of, yes, you're right, I potentially have more benefits. People sue because they actually need the enhanced PIP benefits.
Well, in this case, it appears to me that it's a little bit more than academic because she has had injuries, she's had medical expenses, she's had possibly up to $100,000 in medical expenses, so it would seem wise to perhaps think in the future a little bit and think about, I may need this in the future, I have a right to it, so something about.
Well, Your Honor, I think the facts in front of the trial court weren't in her state of mind, and maybe I'll need this. The allegation was made in the complaint, and in the record that the trial court has was that it was not foreseeable she would need further treatment until she was told in 2006 that her surgery needed to be redone. basically, the premise of the case was that she'd been given a clean bill of health after the surgery and the follow-up care she'd received shortly thereafter. No reason to think, you know, I need to be looking for additional coverage here for this accident until she received new information in 2006.
Approach, what would ever get the statute of limitations going? You're saying she could have waited 10 years, 12 years, 15 years till she had more injuries? And that's, oh, now I need to reform the policy.
There's obviously causation issues there, Judge. I mean, it'd be hard to say that something happening 10 or 15 years later is still related to the accident.
Well, I don't know. Lawyers think of things like that all the time. but my point is, put 10 years aside. What would be the stopping point under your approach?
Well, there still has to be a connection to the accident. Here, I think we allow sufficient grounds. A surgery that was considered to be a consequence of the accident, never any dispute about that, was later had to be redone. So there would be potentially a concern about more tenuous claims being accident-related 10 or 15 or even 5 years later than that, but that's not the facts before the trial court. The allegation in the complaint was the surgery that was considered accident-related had to be redone. No attenuated connection to the original medical care.
Assume there isn't a question of causation, and take Judge Richman's question. Would 10 years? 10 years later, she could still file a lawsuit, right? Bring an action.
I guess if she was seeking some type of rehabilitation benefit that had exhausted and didn't foresee, and that's the other thing here is I agree. It has to be, if it's foreseeable that this is going to happen, then I would argue, yes, the cause of action would accrue much sooner than when the benefits actually expire, if you can foresee it. I don't know what person would assume, or a doctor would testify, that surgeries have to be redone. It can happen, but is it foreseeable? Is it going to be the case with virtually the majority or high percentage of people? I don't think anybody goes into medical care thinking that's going to be the outcome. Is the likely that a surgery is going to have to be redone? And so I don't think the trial court dealt with a situation. It was alleged in the complaint that Mrs. Alec did not anticipate any of this happening until her doctor told her in 2006 the surgery had to be redone.
At $50,000 in signed an after 100 finished.
Correct.
She has a lawyer representing her. Reformation cases are going on like crazy all over the state, having to give benefits to be reformed. And you don't think it would have been prudent at that time, reformation?
Well, you know,
if she runs over.
The question is, what damages would she seek by virtue of reformation?
Equitable ruling.
So, well, if that's the standard, then most people would have, there would have been a whole plethora of more cases of people just saying, well, I don't know if I need it, but I might as well file the lawsuit because I might need it. I think that a party should be allowed to assume that if they believe they're getting adequate PIP benefits under normal coverage, they should not be required to file an action that may be just simply academic or exercise in terms of trying to obtain additional coverage that may not even be necessary. And here is not even foreseeable, again, as the facts were before the trial court. I see I have
10 seconds or so.
I will reserve the limited time I have for rebuttal.
Okay.
May it please the court, Good afternoon. My name is Kathy Cheney, and with me is Christopher Jones, who we represent Farmers Insurance Exchange. And quite frankly, from our perspective, the issue before the court is very clear, and it's very straightforward, which is the trial court's granting of our summary judgment motion should be affirmed. Mrs. Allard was advised that she only had basic PIP benefits in 2001, more than 8 years before she filed the lawsuit. Mrs. Allard was advised 5.5 years before she filed the lawsuit that her medical expenses were exhausted, and Mrs. Allard was represented by counsel during that time period when she was so advised. In other words, her accrual for statute of limitation purposes for the claim of failure to offer enhanced PIP benefits occurred in 2003 at the latest. Arguably, it occurred in June 2001 when Farmer sent her the letter advising that basic PIP benefits were available, and then outlined in that letter specific time and dollar limitations for the benefits. There have been 7 cases, federal and state court, 4 federal, 3 state, that have addressed this very issue. Every single one of them have applied accrual dates based on when the plaintiff knew or should have known of the failure to offer enhanced PIP benefits. This is for a statutory reformation, and as Judge Richmond acknowledged and pointed out, there's no requirement for damages. As one of the cases held, I think it was Wagner, a division from this court in 2007, this isn't a personal injury claim. This is a statutory reformation. It is declaratory relief, which is what I think it was the Supreme Court of DeCoco, who the appellant relies extensively on in their briefs, which involved the pedestrian suing the carrier of the vehicle who hit the pedestrian and his own carrier, both for enhanced PIP benefits. In that case, the court ruled that your carrier pedestrian is excess under the now repealed 10-4707. You will never get there if you are successful with vehicles carrier for unlimited time or dollar amounts. That is why that case is so distinctively different than our case, and appellant's reliance on it is misplaced. But even in that case, the court recognized that even in that situation, when you're not asking for personal injury damages, when you're asking for declaratory relief, it still could be right for adjudication. And in this particular case, what we have is all 3 grounds that have been recognized in all of the cases proceeding today have been met, which are the plaintiff was advised in a letter that they only had basic PIP benefits. The cases that held that were Shimmer, Sanford, and North. In our case here today, Mrs. Allard was so advised in a letter dated June 26, 2001. Second ground for accrual recognized in Nelson, Colby, Sanford, Murray, and Crosby was the date that basic PIP benefits terminated. The PIP benefits at issue here aren't rehab, aren't loss of wages. The basic PIP benefit forming the basis for this lawsuit are medical expenses.
Ms. Cheney, I might ask you to stand behind the podium just because this is being hopefully transmitted over the internet and some people may be listening. And we're also recording it for us to listen to later, and I want to make
I'm always uncomfortable standing behind the podium, so I don't feel like I can see.
Well, we used to have it go up and down, but I don't think it does in the new position here.
I understand.
Thank you.
The PIP benefits that are the focus of this lawsuit are the medical expenses that were exhausted, that were expired by their time. The dollar amount being exhausted in June of 2003. The context of this case is this woman had a cervical spine fusion less than 2 years after the accident. It was actually a year after the accident. The accident happened in June of 2001. She had a cervical spine fusion in July 2002, a little over a year later, and she exhausted her medical expenses, $50,000, a year later in June of 2003. And lo and behold, in 2006, that cervical fusion had to be redone. If you were to accept the appellant's argument that accrual for statute of limitations purposes doesn't start ticking until benefits, medical expenses above and beyond basic PIP are incurred and submitted to the carrier, that would effectively overrule all seven of these cases, and it would put insurance companies in a position of being exposed to claims for 20, 30, 40, 50 years. I mean, what would, instead of the cervical fusion having to be redone 3 years later, what if the cervical fusion had to be redone in 20 years from now? Anybody that practices in this area of the law understands that that's actually common, that cervical fusions either have to be redone or another level has to be fused with it. That happens as you age. She was relatively young. I don't actually know her date of birth, but it would conceivably be very expected that it could happen 20 years from now, 30 years from now. And if you accept appellant's argument of when accrual takes place, it wouldn't accrue until then, which means the defendants would be forced to defend stale claims where evidence has been lost, files purged, agents died. I mean, they're no longer competent or capable. I mean, they're going to be old by that point of time. Well, appellant cited a case, Morrison versus Goff, in their brief for the purpose of, I think for de novo review. That was the purpose it was cited. But actually, when you read that case, it's very enlightening to at least the Colorado Supreme Court's view on statute of limitations and the road that our state chooses to take. That was a legal malpractice case. And the Supreme Court in that case had to decide, do we want a bright line rule for statute of limitations purposes to be when a criminal defendant is exonerated, which could be years down the road, or do we want a two-track system when you know a wrong has occurred, even though you haven't been damaged yet, criminal defendant, to go ahead and initiate that lawsuit for statute of limitations purposes. Colorado chose that line for statute of limitations purposes, recognizing that it's our state's public policy that we want, in a, for consideration of judicial economy, to expedite these kind of claims, to make sure that defendants aren't in a position where they have to defend stale claims with evidence lost and witnesses unable to be located. There are literally dozens and dozens of cases that stand for the proposition that declaratory relief, reformation, you don't need damages. Every single case that has addressed the failure to offer enhanced PIP benefits, and there have been many that aren't cited in our briefs that involve class actions in both the federal and the state court, they have all used one of the three tests I mentioned earlier. None of them have used a, you have to wait until you incur a bill in excess of basic PIP. In fact, Judge Nottingham, I believe it was, in Santham, specifically rejected that argument and called it bizarre. And I think it was the Nelson case, as Judge Roman pointed out, again, rejected the argument that you have to wait until all benefits were exhausted. In Nelson, it was a loss of wage claim at issue. And the plaintiff tried to make the argument that the statute of limitations hasn't begun to run, courts, because I still have med and rehab, even though my loss of wages claim was exhausted. The Nelson Court specifically rejected that and said that it is neither illogical nor inefficient to require a plaintiff to timely make a claim for a particular kind of benefit while receiving a qualitatively different kind of benefit. So there are cases that have already been decided that have rejected plaintiff or appellant's position, but the facts of this case clearly put Mrs. Allard on notice. Her affidavit, backing up to the letter from Farmers in 2003, your medical benefits are exhausted. Your medical expenses currently exceed your medical benefit. If you want us to use your rehab, we will reduce your available rehab benefit. That's a damage. And you better talk to your health carrier about it to make sure that you're going to be covered. And that's exactly what happened in this case. Her affidavit attached to her, I think it was a summary, response to the summary judgment motion, specifically said the bills at issue from the 2006 surgery that they're here claiming about or complaining about were paid by her health insurance company. And that's exactly what Farmers advised her to do in 03. That's exactly what her affidavit acknowledged that she would do when this very thing happened. So to say that it wasn't ripe or damage hadn't occurred is completely at odds with all of the facts in the record. It's completely at odds and inconsistent with all of the holdings in the seven cases cited in our briefs. The damages for Mrs. Allard, if you want to call them that, is when enhanced PIP benefits were offered in 2003, when there's a lost opportunity for benefits without a dollar or time limitation, even if they're 40 years from now. It's the letter saying that you no longer have medical benefit coverage. The damages are your reduction in rehab benefits to use to pay medical expenses. It's the position that your health carrier is going to have to pay for your medical expenses, which you acknowledge in 03, which necessarily involves co-pays, deductible, maybe an increase in health insurance premiums. All of this occurred prior to, well, June 2003, maybe July 2003, when she returned her affidavit, and the lawsuit in this case wasn't filed until March 30th, 2009. In conclusion, there is not a single case that supports Mrs. Allard's position. And in fact, as I said earlier, if this court were to support that position, it would effectively overrule all those other seven cases and put insurers in a position where they are faced with interminable exposure to claims that won't end until all of those policyholders die, conceivably, which may, you know, could be 20, 30, 50 years from now. And all of that flies in the face of our state's recognition and adoption of statutes of limitations that preclude stale claims and support judicial economy for expeditious litigation. So Farmers Insurance Exchange respectfully requests that this court affirm the district court's order finding that Mrs. Allard's claims are time barred. Thank you.
Mr. Markle, I think you have a minute and 6 seconds left.
Basically, two points I'd like to make with the court. First, the DeCoco decision obviously is a key decision in our opinion, and it's important. The enhanced PIP, an issue in that case where the first claim had been made with one carrier, is not unlimited coverage. There's an overall cap in the enhanced PIP of $200,000 in total benefits available under enhanced PIP, the $100,000 normal plus an additional $100,000. So it wasn't, I don't know the extent of the injuries in the DeCoco case, but it wasn't like, it was very unlikely that Mr. DeCoco would ever reach the second policy. We don't know. I don't think we know enough facts about that case to judge. Secondly, on this potential of claims being filed 30 years from now, the statute of limitations would be triggered no later than the expiration of the normal PIP benefits, 5 years for medical, 10 years for rehab. Then you'd have that'd be the latest date you could file your claim, not 30, 20 years later. And as I indicated before, there's other limits on that in terms of foreseeability. If you're making a claim,
right, what happens stale? What happens in the fifth year? What is the significance of the 5 years having run?
Well, that's the normal coverage for medical coverage under either.
That's when PIP medical benefits terminate, right?
Right.
But if you exhaust $50,000 before that, they terminate then, don't they?
Right.
So
I mean, if they terminated, you're correct. If they
terminated
it. But my point is that this isn't that thing where we'll be back in court 30 years from now arguing PIP cases. The statute hadn't run.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Markle. And thank you, both counsel, for your arguments. And this matter will stand submitted, and an opinion will issue in due course. And the court will be in recess, and the bailiff may so announce. Thank you.
All right.